You're listening to the Professional Brotherhood Podcast, because when the alarm sounds, nobody cares if you're career or volunteer.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Professional Brotherhood Podcast, episode 138, as we just looked up because none of us could remember, or I couldn't remember anyway. But we're finally recording again. I'm excited about tonight's episode. I'm not going to give you some bullshit story about how we're going to get back to the regular weekly recordings, because that's probably not going to happen. So we're just going to roll with it and see what happens. But I am excited because we have not had a guest in a while. And tonight we do have a guest. But first, as always, I'm going to say hello to Kara. Hey, Kara, what's up?
Hello. Nice to be here.
It is nice to have you here.
Not quarterly.
Right. Or not quarterly. And things are well in central New York, I'm assuming.
Things are well in central New York. We have reached second stage winter. We had fake spring a couple weeks ago. So we're cruising right through our usual, bipolar seasons that we have. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Good stuff.
Yeah. Everything's good.
All right. Well, I would like, could you do me a favor and introduce tonight's guest? That would be awesome of you.
Yes, I am. Tonight we have Lieutenant John Clark, who is a volunteer member of Cazenovia Fire Department in Cazenovia, New York. And we are excited to have him on tonight. John has a lengthy career in the fire service. And he has an interesting point of view because he took a little break from volunteering to focus on family and young kids that are very active in sports and all that kind of thing. And he was able to come back and not only come back, but come back into a position where he moved up to leadership. And so we're going to talk all about all those good things and coming back and all that stuff. So, John, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. Big fans of the show. You and Brian talk about great topics, point out good, bad, and all the good things in between what goes on in fire service. And yeah, really happy to be here.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, John. Yeah, we like to say that how do we word it sometimes? I know Kara and I have talked about this, and my buddy Tommy, when we do our seminar, refer to it all the time as we like to say the things that people are too afraid to say. Sometimes. Right. But we know that they're talking about, right? They're just too afraid to say them, right? For whatever reason that may be. So let's before we dive into it, let's kind of establish your timeline here, because I thought when Kara first approached me about this, I thought this was a great episode for a lot of reasons, right? Because I know in my time in the fire service, there are probably times in my years of service that, well, let's just say maybe I should have taken a bit more of a backseat than I did to focus on the things that you decided to focus on, right? Which is extremely, extremely commendable, but very, very hard for some people to do, right? Once they kind of get in the trenches of volunteering, and especially if you fall in love with volunteer fire service, right? It's hard to kind of back off, even if it is for the best reason ever, right? Family. So let's establish that timeline. If you could just tell us, when did you first get involved? What was your pathway? How long were you around? And then, what kind of, where did you decide, hey, I need to take a back seat for a little while? And then how long did that last?
Sure. Probably like a lot of people, like probably yourself and I know Kara kind of grew up in and around the fire service. My great grandfather was a volunteer. He was the mayor of our town. My grandfather was the same. He was, the local garbage man, oil delivery guy. He was the mayor and firefighter, and so was my father. And my father was also the local insurance agent. So growing up, before we had pagers and everything, when the fire horn went off, and just had a different had a tone of 332 meant Link Lane Street or something like that. I would hop in the car with him, drive down to the firehouse, and back then they had a big chalkboard and just gave the address of the call, and everyone sure. drove to the scene and grabbed equipment, which is kind of ludicrous when you think about it now, in terms of you show up in your private passenger vehicle and you just try to find a jacket and a helmet and some three-quarter boots and yeah. go put out the fire. So it was kind of always in the blood. I moved back here from living in Rochester, New York in 2001 to raise the family. And then I was working in the village here with my father as an insurance agent. And one day, horn went off, and I saw our ladder truck go by, and I saw the chaos in the backseat, everyone putting the packs on. I'm like, why am I not doing that? So then I had a conversation with my wife, and at the time we had three young kids, and I was like, I want to join the fire department. And she's like, what? So I, with her blessing, joined and went through all the fun training. And then was very active when I first started. It was going to rescue calls and smoke detectors and CO2s and all that good stuff. So I got a lot of great experience, because during the day, like most departments, there's not a lot of folks around. So
sure.
As the family progressed and got into sports, I was spending basically 7 days a week at a hockey rink somewhere in the Northeast or Canada. All three kids were playing. I had two sons and a daughter. So, with two parents and three kids playing hockey, it was difficult logistically to figure out who was going where and what kid was going to get pawned off with a family friend.
Sure.
It was kind of around that time that I was missing practices, missing meetings. And then it was like, well, I got to take a leave of absence. I can't make a commitment to both,
Right.
I put it in neutral, and it was a hard decision, but it was the right decision for the family. And then I was off for probably about 5-6 years. And always kind of in the back of my mind, I want to get back into it. I got great satisfaction out of it. My wife kind of always teases me, and she's like, why do you do this? And I'm like, because I like it. I like helping people.
Sure.
I'm not like some firebug where I want to just, go play in the structure fires. I get great satisfaction helping the community, and growing up was always on sports teams, and that camaraderie at the firehouse, I miss that. I miss kind of ball busting and all that good stuff. So got back into it right after COVID hit, probably 2021. So I was off for about 5 or 6 years, but it was good that I took a little sabbatical, because I did go to one house fire that I probably shouldn't have. I hadn't been going to practices, and wasn't fit, probably wasn't mentally fit either, and had an assignment, went up and did something, and it just, the lack of training really showed up on that day.
So this was when you came back, or
no,
this
no,
was
that, that, that's
before
that's,
you that, decided
that's,
to
that's right. That was kind of like the moment I was like, well, I need to maybe take a break, because when you fall out of a, when you go up into an attic crawl space with a hand line, and then you come falling out of the crawl space and the attic ladder is no longer there, and you fall at the feet of one of your officers, that's not the shining moment of anyone's career. And I can poke fun at myself and say, I probably should have known better not to put myself in that situation by not going to practices and stuff like that. So right. I kind of look at my fire career in two different stages, like the young kind of naive me, and now the more maybe mature, maybe wiser. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kara, where were you involved for the entire, we'll call it the evolution of John? Were you around for the entire evolution?
Wasn't he? He started before I did, and he was in before me, actually. And then I came in, and he was still kind of like on the books, on the roster. But I think that was kind of the time where he was sort of kind of struggling to find that balance and you know, I know at that time he was kind of falling behind in practices and things like that. And, you know, trying to figure out how he's going to make everything work, which is really hard when you have a business and, you know, young kids and everything, sure. especially if they're yeah. in sports. So then when he came back, I was a lieutenant. So I was his lieutenant when he started coming back around more and was able to make a little bit more of a time commitment. And he actually, you know, jumped right back in. And one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about is when people do this, especially in the volunteer service. And again, we always say this, I don't know what it's like in other states, but in New York, it's, you know, whatever trainings you're required to do and all the requirements are the same regardless, if Right. you're getting paid for it or not. So if you're not making your trainings, you're not able to run calls, you're not able to do that. And that's of course all the stuff that people want to do. And like John just said, that's how you serve the community. So I think, it can be intimidating if you've taken a step back to think about, like, how am I going to come back and get back into this training? So, John, did you feel like that was going to be a challenge for you? Or when you first started to come back in to get back into that mode of training, was that difficult?
It was, because I had, you know, kind of during that 5-6 years that I was off, I had put on a ton of weight with, basically just eating fast food when you're on the road with the kids for honky. And it was kind of at that point, you know, laying on the couch during COVID, like, at, you know, max capacity of 255 pounds. My wife was like, you need to do something, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm going to join the fire department. So I lost a ton of weight. Then I joined and got back into it. And then, you know, I thought I was fit because I was running or jogging. And I thought I could, oh, I'll do a couple live burns. I'm back into it. And then we had one of our trainings, and, you know, during the evolution of doing the search, I find the mannequin, and I go to start dragging them out, pushing them out, and I had no legs left, and I couldn't do it. I was, and Carol was sitting there watching me as, you know, the lieutenant, make sure I was doing the right things. And, I had to leave the mannequin. I was so mad at myself. And I was like, if that was a real thing, you just left a victim inside. So I wasn't, even though I'd lost the weight, I wasn't physically fit in terms of firefighting. And I don't think I was mentally fit as well. And then, you know, to the credit of the officers, they said he's not ready, which, and I kind of took that personally, but in a good way. I was like, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe I'm not ready. You know, it is tough coming back, because I'm over 50, and, you know, when I first joined, you know, you're younger, you're in your early 30s or mm-hmm. late 20s, and you don't think anything bad's going to happen. And then when you're older, you're like, oh, this is a different ball game. And so I think, you know, and the department did it smartly. I think, you know, like, I had to do at least three live burns and kind of show them that I knew what I was doing again. So that was a good formula to get me back into it. Definitely.
So you guys kind of mentioned this, and I'm curious about the kind of the two stages of this journey on this question, right? So, and it's the support, right? I wonder how the support was, and in a couple places. I wonder in that time, because I know I've watched, you know, I've watched people's journeys over the years, and I've been on that side as an officer where somebody, you know, kind of stops coming around, right? And then they decide at some point that they're either not going to come around at all anymore, or maybe they're going to start coming around. But I know sometimes the chatter around the firehouse and the support of that decision might be less than stellar at some time, you know, at times where you're like, you know, you're kind of there, but you're not, right? So I'm curious as to if you felt like any certain kind of way from your fellow active members prior to making that decision to take a little time off. And then I'm doubly curious to know, when you did come back, when you did say, hey, all right, I'm going to get involved, I'm going to start doing this again, how was the welcoming for you to come back in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, like, when I took my leave, I mean, we're in a small town, and you know, I'm a little older than Kara, but you know, you see everybody, right? So I would see people that, you know, are still in the department and were active, and hey, how are things going? And I would say, hey, I want to get back. I'd like to get back. And so, you know, no animosity or no one treated me any differently when I wasn't.
That's great.
And then when I came back, it was, you know, handshake. Hey, great to have you back. You know, we missed you. Can't wait to have you back on the fire ground. So great support from top to bottom. You know, Kara was a great mentor and a great friend in terms of bringing back in, helping me with my, you know, physical fitness. You know, I went from, you know, at the heaviest during COVID at 255 down to about 210 is my kind of fighting weight now. And, you know, she's a great example of what you can do when you put your mind to it. I wish I could get up at the ass crack of dawn like she does in the firehouse. But
freaking overachievers, you know, I mean.
And, you know, and she does a great job but she does a great job with our Saturday firefighter fitness that we do at our station. And we have probably what, I don't know, 6-8 regulars, Kara, that come down and, you know,
yeah,
I go to that.
6-8 regulars that are steady. And then sometimes that number is bigger, you know, just depends. And then we have a group of folks there that, I gave individual training plans to that are doing individual training too. I think it's so important what you said, like that you felt even when you were, you know, not able to be around or be as involved, you didn't feel animosity. And then when you came back, you felt welcomed and included. And I think that's a huge cultural piece, especially in the volunteer service, that is so important. And really, I think that's great to hear from your perspective. And I think it's important for all of the listeners, you know, to really hear that and think about it. Is your department making it a culture of welcoming, and we can get you back to where you need to be because we want you here? Because I think there is that tendency that you alluded to, Brian, that, you know, are people going to be like, oh, you know, you never come around, so, you know, I'm not going to waste my time talking to you, or not gonna, you know, whatever, or oh yeah, I'm not gonna invest the time in training you because you're just gonna dip out again, you know, I mean, that kind of culture, it doesn't really serve anybody, and it's not helpful to attracting the kind firefighters that you want to have on your team, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And it's a bigger, broader issue. Like I'm glad this, you know, I'm glad to hear, you know, how things were handled and that you felt supported on the way out and that you were felt supported on the way back in. Cause one of the things that, you know, I've talked about over the years with people and firefighters and sometimes even my own members is, you know, sometimes we don't do a great job of that. All right, especially when somebody that was around all the time, like was one of those consistent people that you could constantly count on, and now all of a sudden they're not coming around as much, right? Sometimes we do a really shitty job at just asking why, right? And guys will chatter around the firehouse about, you know, what they think, you know, why this person isn't coming around, or, you know, and it's sometimes complete fabrication and rumor, you know. But if you tie that into like the mental health piece that we talk about sometimes, you know, sometimes somebody could be actually going through something. Right. And this wasn't your case. Right. But there are instances out there where people start kind of fading away because they're going through something that's not positive, you know, and instead of reaching out and saying, hey, what's going on? Can we help you? You know, we don't always do that. Right. Which I think is extremely important for our listeners to understand, you know, and I've said this before, sending a text message to somebody, it's not the same thing, you know? So it's great to hear of a situation where, you know, you decided that, hey, the right thing for you at that particular moment in your life was to take a step back and focus on your kids and focus on your family and focus on the things that you needed to do. right? And that was okay, right? And that when you decided to come back, everybody was happy to have you and supported you 100% and didn't give you that, you know, that bullshit like, well, you know, you left us before, you're going to leave us again.
Right. You know, that was in the back of my head. Like how was everyone going to treat me when I walked back in for the first meeting? You know, they might be like, what's he doing here again? But everyone was great. And then, you know, like as it progressed, you know, after calls, you know, we would sit around and everyone does it. You know, everyone sits there and we shoot the shit after a call. And, you know, Carol always was checking in on me, like, how's it going? You know, you need anything? So it was great to come back to it. It seems like it's a well-oiled machine that, you know, coming back to, it's great to be part of it. So I can't think of a better, you know, scenario to walk into.
Yeah, which is great. And the other thing I wrote down here, and I highlighted it, scratched it a couple of times because I wanted to make sure I came back to it, was your own self-reflection, right? And we talk about that. We've talked about that a lot on the show before.
Right,
and I've talked about it on Instagram lives and other things, right? How important self-reflection is, right? And you had a couple of points in your story where there's some self-reflection, right? One,
yeah.
You know, one at that point where you were like, shit, I haven't been doing what I need to do to be ready to do this job, right? So maybe I need to really consider what the hell I'm doing here, right? And then when you come back, you know, looking at yourself and knowing that, hey, you know, I took some time off, I went through COVID, had a lot of windshield time with the kids, a lot of fast food, a lot of drive-through, you know, shit, if I want to do this again, and I want to be a valuable part of the team, I need to look in the mirror and take responsibility for myself to get to where I need to be. And I think that's hugely important.
Well, and also it's when you have someone in the firehouse that is beating that drum of fitness.
I don't know who that could be.
Because I mean, prior to that, no one was doing that. I mean, we had a weight room, but no one used it. And there was barely anything in there.
Sure.
And then, you know, you come back and, you know, it's, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, shocked at like my physical condition back then of, you know, you go into a structure fire at, you know, just way too heavy. I'm surprised, you know, didn't have a heart attack, you know? And now, you know, you fast forward, you know, you're in shape, you know, we go through the three or four live burns to make me kind of get my confidence back, which is really smart because if they just said, hey, here's your bottle and here's your mask, you know, go at it.
Yeah. Go do it. Right.
Yeah. Not the best thing, because after I got cleared, probably maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 months later, you know, pager goes off at midnight and it's, you know, structure fire, you know, report people trapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like, hey, that's what we all train for, right? You don't want to be in that scenario, but that's what you train for. And I kind of knew at that moment, you know, riding in the back of the truck, you know, Kara sitting across from me. And it's kind of like one of those moments where like in a movie, it's like super slow motion. Like it was out of our hydrant district. It was probably, maybe a 10-minute drive. And just like after the signs were given, everyone was just so dialed in. And I, you know, looked across at Kara, kind of like gave her the nod, kind of gave her the fist pump on the knee and was like, let's go to work, you know? And, that was a tough one to walk back into. I mean, we split. Kara did the search with two people. I did fire suppression with another lieutenant, and you know, it didn't work out that well. We had two, you know, fatalities from it. But you know, the old me, I would have been through the bottle in 4 seconds. You know,
well, and there's so many ways I could go. I could go so many different directions, and so many things that I've dealt with over the years, and conversations that with what we're talking about here, and you know, one of them being just that, and Kara, you know, being in a leadership position now for a while, I'm sure you've experienced this. You know, when somebody stops coming around, but maybe they're showing up enough to meet the minimum standard, you know, whatever that may be, you know, X number of drills or X number of calls or X number of meeting, but they're really just like treading the line, right? And again, we're all volunteers, right? So none of us are in the business of kicking people out, right? So I know I deal with it every 6 months. We have this, you know, this list of people that we go through. Oh, John Doe didn't meet his calls. He didn't show up for the dozen drills he was supposed to be at, you know? All right, what are we going to do? Well, he made an attempt. Yeah, he made an attempt. All right, well, let's put him on triple extended probation for another 6 months and tell him that he's got to come to three more drills, you know, or whatever, you know? Yeah. And then 6 months later, you're having the same conversation. And next thing you know, it's 2 years later, and you have somebody on the books that really hasn't been doing much of anything, right? But you always have that one person at the firehouse is like, well, he's a good fireman, but he hasn't been here. He hasn't been here in two years.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What, maybe he was a good fireman 2 years ago, right? But how do we know he's still a good fireman? You know, hasn't showed up at a drill in 2 years. Like, what are we doing here? Right. And again, I look at things a little bit differently, especially when I'm in the chief officer's seat, is like, no, this guy is now a liability to me, right? He shows up and he hasn't been here for 2 years and he decides, oh, right, today's the day I'm going to put my SCBA and my PPC back on. And he goes in that building and something happens, right? Now this guy's my problem. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So have you had similar dealings up in your area? Or conversations?
Yes, non-specific.
Non-specific. Always non-specific.
Of course.
Right.
Right. Non-specific. But yeah, I think exactly like you said, we don't want to have that kind of a, you know, that's not what we're all about, but
right.
I think it's really important to recognize, and I tell this all the time to people when I'm onboarding them, it's not a club. Some fire departments have a section where you can join as like a club member or like auxiliary or things like that.
Sure.
But for the folks that truly are there to be a firefighter, we have laws, rules, regulations mm-hmm. that we have to follow. And we have a huge liability to not only protect the citizens of our community, but the firefighters that are training under us and that we are asking to put their, sometimes truly put their lives on the line, you know, not to sound like, you know, super cheesy about it, but you ultimately you're going to have those crazy calls and you know, if anything can happen, we don't know. It's, you know, we're trying to mitigate risk and be aggressive at the same time. So we need our firefighters to be able to recognize and have self-awareness. I can do this. I want to do this. I'm invested in it. My mindset's not there because my mind, you know, when I'm at the firehouse training, I'm thinking about how I'm missing my kid's game or how I'm missing dinner again, sure. or how I'm doing that. If you can have that self-awareness and recognition, that's huge. Because then he doesn't put you in a position. Yes, you know, we've had people requirement and what happens with that. And there have been people that we've had to have conversations with that said, you know, hey, this might just not be the right time for you.
Right.
Or, you know, like, hey, you've got to make a decision here. You know, we don't want to force your hand, but we also have our own, you know, parameters that we have to follow. So those conversations can be difficult, but I do wholeheartedly feel that it's not a club. It's a unpaid job that you're doing.
Yeah.
And you have to like say personnel issue just like you would in the workplace.
Yes, I agree. And one thing I want to come back to that John said, speaking of you again realizing, hey, I'm not in fighting shape, right? And I need to start working out. I need to start exercising. I need to lose some weight. Right. It's not always, I've said this before, it's not always about weight, right? For you and your particular, you recognize what you needed to do. But a lot of times we focus on weight. And I deal with this all the time, right? Because look, this frame that is me has been this frame since I'm 13 years old, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was a kid and eating McDonald's four times a week, I still looked like this. I just, you know, and I thank mom and dad all the time for great metabolism, right? That's what saved Brian all these years is great metabolism. But I do distinctly remember times in my fire service career where I had that self-reflection and was like, holy shit, dude, you need to do something, right? Because you just sucked down a bottle in like lightning speed, and like you're breathing heavy and you're not functioning the way you need to. And, you know, again, you have to have, you have to be able to have those aha moments, because if you can't have those aha moments and then have them and realize that, hey, right, I had it, what am I going to do about it? Right. That's the key, right? Having it is one thing. The what am I going to do about it conversation with yourself is the real important part.
Yeah. I mean, I had to carry that extra weight for way too long. I mean, you know, I was in high school, I was, you know, I played sports, I was active, you know, I was probably like 190, and then went to college, and, you know, you get to college and you're like, oh, there's beer and there's, you know, cafeteria food and all that good stuff. And then you get married, and you know, then the kids come, and you know, you're cleaning up your kids' plates and all that good stuff. And you know, I guess the younger me, I was able to function carrying that weight, but then as I got older, it just was getting harder and harder. So I knew I had to make, if I was going to get back into the game, I had to make a decision to drop the pounds. So now, you know, I'm at a comfortable weight, but you know, finding time is hard with work. You know, I you know, luckily I work from home, but I do have to travel a lot for work. But I thought it'd be easier with my kids all being in college now, that I'd be down at the firehouse, you know, 7 days a week exercising, but it's hard to find the balance again. But I guess that kind of led me back when I did rejoin, and I was asked, you know, hey, now that you're back, do you want to throw the red helmet on, you know, sure. As we refer to the captains and the lieutenants. And you know, I saw that we had that, you know, we had a great officer corps, but you know, as they go up and do their time, you know, we got to replenish it. So it's a big jump though, from the back seat to the front seat. I mean, one of your earlier podcasts, it's you clearly state, you are an officer. Let me repeat that. You are an officer now. So now you are responsible for a crew, not just yourself. That's a, sure. It's a big, big learning curve. But again, I've got a great mentor, with Kara, and the other officers are great in helping me along the way.
So when did you make that? When did you become a lieutenant again?
So this April will be my first full year. Under my own. Yep. So, and it's, I tell you, I mean, all the time in the backseat, you just kind of sit there and wait till you get your assignment, and you kind of know like, okay, I'm going to either grab a set of tools, or I'm going to grab the handline, or I'm going to grab the water can or whatever. But now when you're up front, you're like, okay, who's in back? Who can I pair up? Do I have a senior guy and a new guy? And where are we going? Are we going mutual aid? We're going out of the county. I got to worry about what radio to be on and what tech channel and
sure.
All of that fun stuff that, you know, some of these guys in the front seat make it look so easy all these years of sitting in the back seat. And so I accepted the challenge, and it's definitely a learning process, a big, big curve, because there's so much going on now, you know, it's not easy.
It's an extremely, extremely important position, right? Whoever is sitting in that officer's seat, right? And I don't think that it gets the appreciation that it should, right? Because, you know, I have a couple new officers. Well, I have one brand new officer this year, and, you know, he's just getting his feet wet with, you know, being in that spot. And, you know, again, like you said, coming from the back seat to the front seat, you can tell at times, you know, based on the questions, which I'm glad, look, I love when somebody asks questions, you know, please ask as many questions as you want, right? Because that's how we all learn, right? You're never going to figure it out if you're not asking, you know, the lieutenant and the captain above, if you're the junior lieutenant, if you're not asking the other lieutenant and the captain and the chiefs the questions that you have when you're learning to do this job, it's going to be even harder for you, you know? And, yeah. That position, you just summed it all up, right? Because, you know, me as somebody that's in a vehicle going directly to the scene, it is night and day. The response is night and day different when I have somebody in the officer seat versus when I don't have somebody in the officer seat, right? Because I know that I can count on those three guys, right, to figure out who should drive which piece of apparatus, figure out which guys to put in which piece of apparatus, figure out who to team who up with, right? Assign jobs before they get there, right? All this stuff is extremely valuable, right? And, you know, I'm tremendously appreciative of it, right? Because, look, I can look at my phone and be like, I'm responding. All right, well, who's coming? Great, I've got 12 people coming today, right? But that's all I know, right? Mm-hmm. They're figuring it all out in the engine on the way there. And I'm like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's when, like, if it's a call in the village, you're like, oh boy, I've got about 1 minute from the firehouse to whatever street we're going to figure out all that stuff. So yeah, but I think we do a great job when the call is done. I try to ask, you know, if Kara's around, like, hey, what I do right, what needs improvement, what would you suggest doing? And if she's not there, I'll ask, you know, another officer or one of the chiefs for their comments.
Well, she's a salty dog. She's got to have lots of stuff.
She has not been too hard.
She's being very quiet tonight. I don't know why. This is, you're just kind of like sitting back, taking it all in.
Yeah.
Now she. Oh wait, there you go. You're starting to come back again. You're glitching on me. I don't know if you're glitching on.
Yeah.
Try not to take the whole conversation over.
No, that's fine. So go ahead. I know you got to have some thoughts about everything that we're.
I don't know. Well, you guys were glitching a little bit. Okay.
Well, we're going to blame it on your, internet.
No, I think, right? when you're, oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that's fine. You can blame it on mine. I can take the heat. I can take it.
Okay, good.
When you are a new officer, I think it's so funny. I remember, cause we're a volunteer department, so we don't have set staffing. So when we, show up to go to the call, sometimes if John's there, I will say to him, I'm like, okay, you take the front seat and I'll get in the back.
All right. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
All right. Hold that thought. Cause I'm losing you.
Look, you get up front, and he just looked at me like, and he goes, me?
Oh, that was for the rollover car. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's late. I'm not ready for this.
And that's okay. That's great to do sometimes, right? Because we're so used to like the hierarchy of how things work, right? I know I've done it a few times over the years where I'll just kind of like roll in quietly, right? Like, whatever. Maybe I had something going on when the call initially went out, or, couldn't get out of work, couldn't leave the house, whatever the hell it may be, right? So I didn't jump on the initial call, but, 3-4 minutes later, there's still something going on. So I'll just get in the truck and kind of, quietly make my way down there. And then, of course, again, I think, like, oh, okay, you're in charge. No, you guys are doing a great job. Right? Yeah. I'm just gonna chill back and watch.
Doing great. Right?
You're doing great.
Right ahead.
Keep on going. Keep on rolling.
But yeah. you just get so used to, because it's, we're a small department. It's kind of the same handful of people that are usually the first ones down there. So it's, Kara's there, and I'm so used to her getting in the front seat. So when she was like, hey, you get up there, I was like, what, me? I just wasn't mentally ready. But, as my time goes with a red helmet, I will, you know, I kind of do now when I'm driving down there, thinking myself saying, okay, if I sit up front, I got to start planning now on my way down.
Sure.
What's going to happen. And that's the beauty of the technology that we have now. You know, I am responding, you know, driving down. I live right in the village, so it's a pretty short drive, same as Kara. But it's nice to look, glance down at the phone real quick to see who's coming so that you can kind of start mentally preparing, like, all right, I've got three senior guys and a greenhorn, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll take that team, you know. Yeah. I mean, I'm confident with everyone's abilities, but you know, that's, we get a couple senior guys, a couple new guys, try to pair them up together. That's kind of what I try to do during drills, but during the real thing, it's whoever shows up, you know, get ready to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, how do you guys run? I mean, I know you guys have, you know, multiple pieces of apparatus. So, you know, if it's, you know, structure fire in your village or whatever, even if it's outside the village, but, you know, is it, you know, if you were the ranking officer coming out of the station, do you technically get in the first due piece? And then if John was the next lieutenant in, he would lead the second due piece or however that works. Is that pretty much how you run?
Yeah. That's pretty similar to like what we would do typically. Same. I mean, again, like we have to fill with bodies first, you know, have to, it's like, you know, you got to look and see who's coming, but yeah, typically. And I, we have, if there's another captain, you know, that's already there, whatever, then I just automatically go to the second piece, you know, because I know that that's what we're going to have to do. But if it's, you know, depending on the call, if I have one of the lieutenants that are there and I know that I'm going to be, we're probably only going to take one piece because it's whatever the call is, mm-hmm. I will throw a lieutenant in the front seat because I just think it's so important to not just be like, teach the upcoming lieutenants how to do the captain stuff too while they're still lieutenants, because like we talk about this on the program all the time too, like you're training your next chief, right? Whoever's your lieutenant is eventually mm-hmm. probably going to be your chief, so the time to start having them learn everything is when they're a lieutenant. And if they spent most of their time as a lieutenant on the third due piece of apparatus or the second due piece of apparatus, and they never had to do an on-scene report, or they never had to worry about, like, you know, their initial PAR and resources and all that stuff, then when are they ever going to learn that, you know? So sometimes you have to, when you're, you know, moving up in the ranks, you have to remember, how did I learn, you know? And if you were just basically self-taught or just learned it in training and classes and you didn't learn a lot of it on those down and dirty calls, I try to push John's comfort zone a little bit sometimes, and try to give him situations where he can learn from them a little bit, because, you know, none of us are going to be experts at it. And, you know, none of us go to enough fires to be experts.
Yeah. Well, it's trial by fire per se, right? Sometimes. I mean, that's the best experience, right? Is real life, you know, learning in the real life environment, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So how are you feeling now about where you're at? Seems good. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's really been any, you know, downside. Like, it seems like the whole thing has been a pretty positive experience, which honestly I think is great, right? Because I think maybe because I'm just so used to hearing stories of, you know, people that, you know, took time off for whatever reason and then came back, and maybe that journey back wasn't a successful one. And, you know, a lot of times I think the fault on that is held by more than the person. I think it's a lot of times it's held by the organization as well. And the leadership within the organization. So it's great to hear, you know, a positive journey story per se with support, you know?
Yeah, I mean it's kind of like a lifetime movie, right? It came out
Yeah.
happy ending, right? Yeah, no, it's I mean it there's like, there's been no regrets getting back into it. Everyone's been great in terms of accepting me back in. We have a pretty tight-knit crew. I think our practices are spot on in terms of what we're doing. So I think we don't have the huge, hugest numbers, but I think what we have, I would go into battle, so to speak, with anyone on that first due. And again, that's kind of what that I missed, from my sports days is the camaraderie. So when I was not doing that for the 5 or 6 years, when I was trucking my kids all over Hell's and Half Acre for hockey, I really missed that part of like, just, going to war, so to speak, with your brothers and sisters in the fire ring. And 1 year under the belt of being a lieutenant. I mean, when I first joined, we had, second lieutenant, first lieutenant, and captain in both companies, and then the three chiefs. And now it's just a captain and a lieutenant in both companies, and then the three chiefs. So I think we do a pretty good job of what we have in terms of bringing people along, mentor. We have a pretty good mentorship. When we have new people that join, we team them up with someone that's been around for a while and knows the way around. So, yeah, it's been great.
That's good. And
It's been a fast year.
yeah, well, it always flies by. I
All the
don't,
years seem fast
yeah,
now,
the years definitely fly by. And Kara, how has your recruitment been over the last couple of years, do you think? Just overall
I think
recruitment.
that we're facing, yeah, I think we're facing a lot of similarly across the country, especially on the volunteer side. I think it's even difficult on the career side, honestly. People aren't, there isn't a big focus on trades that needs to be, and blue collar work that needs to be, and I say that over and over again, I know. So recruitment, I think that we are luckier than many departments in our immediate area in terms of getting new members in. One thing I think has been very successful for us, and I will fight for to I will go to the mattresses as they you cannot underestimate the importance of retaining your quality firefighters. So I think recruitment is stumbling and struggling just like everybody is. That's why retention is even more important. And if you three people completely in there, and because you've mistreated that balance, and then you recruit three more in their place, that's great. But those three new people don't replace the experience that you had and the people that you lost and their training and experience. So I think really, I think recruitment is hugely important, but I think retention is absolutely invaluable. And I think that we've been very focused on that recently, especially to make sure that we are being supportive and having that cultural shift. And I think one thing from why I wanted to bring this topic up is I want to encourage other departments to look at it as a positive thing. If you give somebody a little bit of a break, or if they come to you and say, "Hey, I need a little bit to take a little step back," and they have that self-awareness, then don't hold it against them, and don't think that when they come back, they're just going to do it again, or you just have this personal bias that it's not acceptable to do it. Because it can work. It can be really successful. And in terms of retention, it's great because, when John came back, like he said, he had to get back a little bit back into training. He had to get a little bit right with his fitness and, recognize where he was at, have that self-awareness. But, in terms of him versus starting out a brand new person, he had already invested in the New York State fire training. He already invested in the classes and the work and all of that. And that is a person.
Yeah, well, let's think about it a little bit differently, right, for a minute. If this was a 18-year-old kid that joined as a junior at 16, or sorry, age-restricted firefighter. We're not allowed to say junior anymore. All right. If they joined as an age-restricted firefighter at 16 and took their BFO and took their SCBA IFO and took their firefighter survival and took all their classes, right? And they were around for a solid 4 years and then all this, and then picked up and went away to college, right? And then decided to come back to the community 4 years later, or maybe they came home on the summers, we would be welcoming with open arms, right? Like this,
right?
We wouldn't make an episode over that because that's like pretty normal, right?
Right.
But yet when somebody in the later part of their life, for whatever reason, right, and what better reason than you know, family, right, decides, hey, I'm gonna take a step back for a little while, right? The norm, I don't think the norm of the conversation is support and is somebody coming back, you know, a valuable member and then becoming a line officer. And then, you know, I don't think it is this story, right? I think this is a great story to tell because it proves that, hey, yeah, somebody can deal with what they need to deal with in their life, right? And come back and be a valuable, extremely valuable member of our team again, right? If we were talking about a kid that went to college, whatever, we'd be like, oh, they're in college. Maybe they'll be back. Maybe they won't. Right.
Right. Maybe they'll go somewhere else and, you know, be a firefighter there. So we've put another firefighter out into the world. Awesome. Right. You know?
Yes. Yes. And we've talked about that before. Right. Because we have those people that are like, oh, we put all this time. We put all this time and effort into these kids and all this money. And then, you know, and then they're never coming back to this town. They leave. Okay. But they're volunteering in, you know,
wherever they are,
Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, or whatever the hell they are, you know, and they're, you know, so what? You know, they're serving their community somewhere and we gave them that start. Right. So good for us. Good. Yeah.
Right. Well, and if we did a good job training them and did a good job, you know, then it's a credit to us because they're going out somewhere in the other, country. I got my training, I got my start at XYZ Fire Department, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, look, the recruitment piece is extreme. Look, it's important. We got to bring new people in. We're going to cease to exist if we don't bring new people in, right? We got to continuously, you know, get people in to do this job. And I think there's some great initiatives to help us do that. You know, I think in New York, once this stipend program gets pushed through and approved, I think, you know, some money to give people after they finish their, you know, their Firefighter One program or their Fire Officer One program. And hopefully it's a program we can build on. I think that's going to be extremely valuable in getting people to training, right? And keeping them involved. But as you just said, the retention piece, is just as important, right? Because you can't, if you have somebody that's around for 5-10 years, and they disappear tomorrow, that brand new person that walks in the door is not replacing that 10-year person.
Right.
For a while.
Starting to square one again.
Yeah. You're starting over.
Yeah.
You know, you're pretty much starting over. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good. So, all right. So one other question, and then we'll start to wrap this up. So you guys are seeing a little bit of community change, right? With the college closing up there. Did that close already or is it done this year? Is the college closed up there?
It closed. Yeah. Last year was the last year. So now we have the state police have an academy here.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. The state police took it over, which is great. It's, I mean, I don't want to, for me personally, just me as Kara, myself, speaking for myself, it is preferable to having the college here.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I can see that. Plus, you might get some free you might get some free PBA stickers out of it or something. Who the hell knows? You know.
They've been great. They're here for the week and they're gone on the weekends. But it's nice that they're occupying the space and they're utilizing the buildings and everything. So that's really good to see. But we've had a big cut down on the kind of nuisance alarms and the that kind of stuff kind of goes away. Some of the medical calls that we would get really frequently, that's no longer an issue. And good for the village because they were able to sell off chunks of it and bring that back to the tax rolls, which all those buildings were tax free before. So
sure, yeah, no, that's good. Okay, yeah, I was curious as to how that affected the runs and calls and even traffic in and out.
Very cautiously now.
What was that?
Said everyone drives very cautiously in town.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, this has been a great episode. I'm glad we've talked about this for a little while. Going back and forth, Karen and I kicked it around a while ago, and I'm glad we were able to get together finally and record it. Karen, you have anything you want to add before we close it out, or to close it out, I should say?
Yeah, I mean, I just really encourage everybody to take a look at what their, what their written and unwritten policies and what their culture is for this kind of a scenario for some of your firefighters, because it can work and it can be really successful. And, we're so happy to have Clarkie back. As he come back, but he came back and.
And hey, listen, and just so you know, we've ever had two guests from the same department. Two of Kara's mentees from the same department on the podcast. So we're really starting a trend here, right?
Well, she does have that influence on people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, John, anything you want to add before I close it out?
I just appreciated that. Yeah. You guys gave me the time to come on here. I've been listening to your show for probably like 2 years. I think I've listened to every episode, and I think you and Kara are doing a great job about not only, the physical part of it, but the mental part of it. And also, just bringing to light the trials and tribulations of being a volunteer. It's not easy. I think it gets harder in this day and age to track people. Gone are the days of, all the guys that were working in town were also volunteers. That's gone. Now it's, people, unfortunately, like myself, where I work out of my house and I travel, but, if you can be involved in some capacity, whether it's fire department or your local ambulance corps, try to make a difference.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And I appreciate that. It's funny. I'm doing an officer class that I'm in the middle of right now. We just had that conversation the other night about what the makeup, when I first got involved in the volunteer fire department, what the makeup was. We were talking about the different backgrounds and the different just how much it's changed over the years. And again, when I 30 something years ago, when I started, it was mostly the guys that worked for the town or the village DPW or the county or worked for themselves, and they were all able to leave their jobs and respond to the calls pretty much any time of the day or night. And we still have those guys, and I'm thankful that we do, because they're still a extremely valuable part of the organization. But it really has, the demographic has changed a lot. It's good. It's good. It makes it harder. I think it makes it harder for us in ways to maybe find volunteers, maybe fill the seats, maybe get people involved. But I think there's a lot of positives to it as well, and what it makes our organization and how it changes our organization. I'm sure we could find some people that would disagree with that statement that I just made right there.
Yes, there's always the other side of the coin.
But They're probably a little bit older than me and have a few more years than I do. So, guys, I appreciate you coming on to our audience. I appreciate all of you, Karen. I appreciate all of you for listening, for your constant feedback, for dealing with our lack of a regular schedule per se. We truly appreciate it. We still get comments and messages and ideas pretty consistently from people around the country, which to this day really does amaze the both of us, that, you know, that somebody in Wichita, Kansas will reach out to us, you know, they're like, who are we, you know, but it's cool. Right. And it really does, we appreciate it, and it helps us to continue to come up with content, and it makes, you know, helps to realize that what we're doing is needed, and that these conversations are important. So, John, I thank you for joining us, folks. If you want to reach out and you have any comments about tonight's episode, please, as always, you can reach out to Kara or I on social media at professional.brotherhood or St. Florian Fitness. Through the email professionalvff@gmail.com. It's professionalvff@gmail.com. And don't forget, it's not about the paycheck, my friends. It's not about the paycheck. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you. Stay safe.
Thanks, Chief.